God. All right, cool, man.
How are your cats?
They're doing fantastic. I've got Brodus Maximus here is my, he's like a dog to me. He's like, you know, it's like my animal, my boy. And then you've got
oh, there he is.
I have another one named Fiona. She's kind of a little spaz, and so I kind of use her as my, like, you know, the character I just make fun of, basically. But this is the stud. Oh, say hi, Brodus. Say hi to the people. He's just like pissed off, angry, grumpy cat mode right here. Yeah.
Very fluffy, and it has a lion head thing going. Oh, yeah. On. Lion's mane.
Got him cut to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, I hope you're all well, and you're again, for those that don't know, you're coming at us from San Diego, California, right?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. And man, oh wow, we're starting now, right? So I guess that's going to be part of this. Fantastic. All of the listeners are going to be like, "What the hell is this guy droning on about?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was trying to think of a way to introduce you, Scott Shepherd, you know, to people who will listen to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many adjectives. There's teacher, YouTuber, podcaster, entrepreneur, copywriter, and then the most recent one, which is author. Your book is about to come out.
Yeah.
Anti-Net Zettelkasten, Uncovering the True Magic of the Notebox System That Will Turn You into a Research and Writing Machine. That sounds so cool. And I've had the privilege to read a little bit of it. It's pretty big. It's 600, almost 600 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess when you're not doing all of those things, what do you do with your time?
That is probably the most interesting question. Let's see. So, yeah, you know, and you highlighted, I guess, something that I think is present for not just myself, but a lot of people. It's like, you know, we go to that, I don't know, mixer, that party, that whatever, meeting mutual friends of, like, you know, your partner, whoever you're with. And inevitably the question comes up, like, what do you do? Like, who are you? And then me as a copywriter is someone that essentially just writes inspiring pieces of writing that incentivize people or inspire people to take action. So usually that's a sale or something like that. So the number one rule of a copywriter is, first, it's like 96% of your time and energy should be spent on understanding your audience, understanding your reader. So whenever I get that question, I'm like, okay, well, what title do I, and explanation of what I do I pull out of my ass to just help this person understand and not be more confused than when they, you know, even started this conversation. So, I've done a lot of different things in my career. Tech entrepreneur, I've done the internet marketing, dream lifestyle. There was a phase I'm, you know, known in many circles as this, like, underground whale performance marketer that used to drive a ton of sales using the Google Display Ad Network. And there was a time that I was, like, driving a ton of sales online and had, like, 12 million, you know, people on my advertising list that I was remarketing to. This is back in, like, 2014, 2015, 16. And little did they know that I was one person on a 8 megabyte per second connection download speed living on the hill in Moggins Bay, aka Megan's Bay, in the U.S. Virgin Islands, doing all of this stuff. And I had automated my entire business doing that and essentially created this, like, AI powered online advertising agency. And I named my algorithm Stewie, after Stewie Griffin, the Family Guy character. And what's interesting is, you know, so it's like, okay, you know, run a performance marketing agency and kind of a tech geek. And, you know, like, as you know, I've taught myself Python programming all through using note cards and neuro imprinting, you know, the lessons. I would sit down with a book on Python programming, you know, on my floor on a meditation pad. You know, this is before, you know, I was working at a startup at the time, like before the day started, and I would write down by hand all the Python scripts and programs. It's how I taught myself. And so all of this stuff, the major theme going, you know, tying all of this together is I'm someone that loves like a lot of like you yourself. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm someone who loves reading, someone that loves learning. And I find that the most powerful way of learning anything is to unplug, get away from the computer, you know, sit down with a book, read and write on note cards, you know, by hand. And that is the way to learn and ingest information. And also, so I find it is the best way to think and to write. And that, you know, that aspect of copywriting and then also being a writer and, you know, an author is, I think, the thing that is, that's the core part of who I am. So anyway, I've droned on and gone on a long circuitous path in answering your question, but that gives you a flavor of what I do, who I am. And you know me because I've kind of created this whole underground movement around knowledge development using, you know, the Zettelkasten in its truest form, which I contend is its truest form, the analog form, and kind of showing people and teaching people on YouTube. I just pulled out my iPhone like a year ago and I was like, you know what? This is not being covered anywhere. I got to show people how this system actually works. Like if you love writing by hand, but you also don't like all the negative properties of it, like not being able to find any of your individual notes, you know, then this is the ultimate system that solves for any of those perceived inadequacies of like analog knowledge systems. So I've been teaching that for the past year, the Antinet. And, you know,
that's how I discovered you.
Yeah. Yes,
on YouTube with those iPhone videos. And immediately I thought, well, first I was impressed by the size of your Zettelkasten. It was huge compared to, you know, the 40 cards that I had at the time. And it was immediate credibility, like, oh, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. And it wasn't, it's interesting because you do have this background in marketing and copywriting, but it didn't feel salesy. It didn't feel, it was just totally authentic. Like you said, you just had your iPhone and it got a little dizzy sometimes.
Oh, sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes I'd have to pause it, but I wanted more. I just wanted to like reach through the screen and like, okay, but what was on that card? And oh, how did you, what was the reason for that color? Or I had so many questions and the videos just kept coming. So it sounds like you said your core thing is knowledge development and in an analog fashion. And that's enabled you to not only learn or excel at your copywriting, but also learn new languages and write books and all kinds of things. So that's like the quintessential Shapirian, if I can say that word, way of becoming, I don't know, becoming your best self or even just mastering new subjects, developing your mind, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. And a way that I've, you know, this is the route I'm kind of going in the background right now is I'm, you know, want to help more people become influential writers. And at the end of the day, I think a common theme that a lot of people want to reach and want to achieve is, you know, as you know, I've termed it the neo-intellectual life. And that is a life where you get to read, learn, write, you know, do what you love during the day and also make a comfortable living doing it. And essentially what it means is, you know, there's probably an area that a lot of people, you know, have that are fascinated with, yet, you know, they work a regular day job or they're doing something that may not bring that them any fulfillment anymore. And so what they want to do is they want to, you know, people, and this includes myself, this includes everyone, is people want to, a lot of people want to not only learn about a fascinating field that they're interested in, they also want to be an influential voice and contribute to that niche and state their beliefs. And so how do you become an influential voice in a certain niche? Well, you have to be an influential thinker and you have to have thought through a lot of these things very, very deeply. And how do you become an influential thinker? Well, one of the ways is you have to have influence. And in order to have influence, you have to create a tribe in your niche and, you know, reach and clearly communicate with your people. And how do you do that? Well, the best way to become an influential voice and build a tribe is to become an influential writer, because writing is thinking. If you want to become an influential thinker, you first should become an influential writer. And so there's a common theme and a reason why, like, all of the thought leaders, and I hate that term thought leader, but whatever, you know, because I think it's been hijacked by a bunch of those LinkedIn, you know, clickbait type of, you know, pseudo influencers. I'm talking about the real intellectual thought leaders, you know, and the best way to actually develop thought is through writing. And the only problem with that advice is that a lot of people have their writing advice is just sit down at a computer and write. That's how you'll become a better writer. And there's a certain aspect of that, that's true. You know, you can't just become a better writer by just thinking all day. You actually have to write. But the most important and key part of this whole equation that no one ever talks about is the key to becoming an influential writer and developing influential ideas is to have a knowledge development system. And that is what Nicholas Luhmann figured out when he wrote 70 books and, you know, published 550 peer-reviewed articles. He did so, and he became influential not because he just wrote, you know, from the seat of his pants. It's because he had a knowledge development system. And I contend that the purest and the best way to develop knowledge and the best knowledge development system is an analog knowledge development system architected and built out using the principles, you know, Luhmann abided by and followed, which is what the anti-net is. So
yeah,
I've started as kind of like the hopefully that sequence makes sense, because I think a lot of people, if I just start out with, oh, what do you do? And I just go into nerd mode and talk about the note card system of the anti-net, they don't get the overall big picture. The overall big picture is to become an influential thinker in the space and the field you're fascinated by. And in order to get there, you need to become an influential writer. And in order to become an influential writer, you need a knowledge development system. And the best one is the anti-net. So
there's that hierarchy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so another way to describe you is a revolutionary in that
analog knowledge revolutionary.
Yes. Right. You've started something called the neo-intellectual life, which comprises that whole stack, learning how to do knowledge development, what you contend is the pure way, the analog way, the way that Nicholas Luhmann and not just him, right? There've been many people throughout history who have had versions of this note card system. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It started in, it started probably earlier, but the earliest trace we have in history is from a man named Conrad Gessner in the 1500s. He outlined his own note card system, his own slip box system, you know, slips of paper system for developing and recording his thoughts. And there's this whole lineage, and there's a lot of people throughout history that have created, you know, their own versions of their own notebooks. And, you know, Luhmann's, I think, was the biggest advance because, you know, and his was in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, you know, is when he really 1951 or 52 is when he created his own version. His own version is wherein you address every single individual thought, and then you can branch down those, you know, those thoughts individually to inwardly, infinitely expand those ideas. But even before Luhmann, everyone had their own version of, you know, developing knowledge. John Locke had one of the most awesome and prolific systems. His was kind of a mashup of commonplace books, but he also had an index. So he used like the index component of the anti-net in order to be able to find, you know, all of his individual thoughts as well. And even look, you know, what the problem that happened is that as soon as, you know, the whole using the evolution of all these analog knowledge development systems finally came to their, I would say, their most developed form in the you know, during the Lumen era. But then what happened was, well, the computer revolution hit and everyone shifted from this evolved version of doing knowledge development into digital. And they've kind of, in their attempt to export knowledge development into digital, they've actually, a lot of the properties that made, you know, knowledge development super potent and effective are now lost. And people are lost, you know, with these digital tools like Obsidian and Notion. And every 3 months, there's a new one that comes out that, you know, poses as dethroning whatever the hot new digital note-taking app is. And all of them, they get it wrong because they're trying to add more features instead of trying to add more friction. You need to slow down the mind, slow down. We're in this information fire hose, and you need to add more friction to your thinking so that you're forced to figure out what this, if this information or if this thought is even important enough to grasp and understand, and then where to install the thought, and then where to, you know, evolve it. So I'm talking in abstractions, but that is the general overview of what has gone on and taken place. And I'm basically saying my whole analog revolutionary movement is saying, whoa, 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 we need to move back to the analog medium for developing thought. There's a magic in writing by hand. There's magic with thinking on paper. We need to go back to where Lumen, you know, left off, and we need to create and evolve, you know, his system. We're not going to continue to go backwards into the Stone Age, but there's a power to friction-based knowledge systems, having to actually think about what an item is and slowly write it down by hand instead of just copying, pasting a bunch of crap that you read on the internet. So
right. It's like, yeah, weightlifting. There needs to be resistance. Otherwise, what are you doing? You know, what's the point, yep, of it all? And I want to make a point there, because it's not like you're a Luddite or your revolution is all about resisting technology, but it's asking, mm-hmm, the question, what's the best technology? And, you know, for what? Like, it's, you're saying that hand, like pen, paper, brain, a notebook is perhaps the best technology for knowledge development, mm-hmm, which enables you to become a better thinker and a better writer and possibly make it a lifestyle change out of that. But it has to start at that core competency.
Yeah.
So it's not a rejection of technology. It's saying this paper, pen, brain, that is the technology. That's, mm-hmm, perhaps the best technology. And I think we kind of forget that sometimes. We think of technology as software, digital, mm-hmm, or, and that every release, usually, you know, when there's a new update on an app, it's like bug fixes, improvements on this or whatever, new features. And we kind of get used to the idea that new is better and has new things, improvements. And I think you're asking, like, better in what way? How is this more efficient? Efficient for what? So Notion, Rome Research, I actually haven't used Rome or Obsidian, but I've dabbled in some of the old school ones like Evernote, OneNote. There's so many.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good at something the brain is too, but they're really good at storing, mm-hmm, and like capturing, and you can, yep, tag things and you don't have to think. There isn't any friction. You just, mm-hmm, need to type it, click save.
Yeah.
It manages all that. That's what computers, yeah, are really good at.
You're taught to something
very important.
Yeah, you're just taught to tag every individual note or thought. And then what you're left with is, like, you know, 1,000 tags that just are completely irrelevant. When you are in a frictionless environment, what you end up is just creating a ton of garbage, a ton of information, and not deep, highly evolved knowledge. And so that is something that, you know, back, there's a writer, and I wrote about this in one of my emails recently. The writer, the famous biographer, and he won several Pulitzer Prizes, Robert Caro. And,
yeah,
you know, he had that lesson from his writing professor in college, where he was like, Mr. Caro, you need to stop thinking, you know, with your keyboard, with your fingers. You know, you need to pre-process your thoughts by writing by hand. And I think that's what this essentially is. Like, I'm not a Luddite, like, or a Luddite. I, you know, wrote my book, of course, you know, using software, right? And I edit it using software. And I'm like, you know, I'm pretty proficient. I'm pretty proficient around the computer, right? Like I know a lot of JavaScript, Python. You can be considered quite a techie nerd, right? However, when I'm going to write something, and if it's a book, the important thing to do is the process to do is the analog knowledge, your knowledge development system acts as a preprocessor for your thoughts. So by the time I even get down to writing to that blinking cursor, I've already thought so deeply about this topic that what ends up, you know, happening is I'm a big fan of the idea that you should write the first shitty draft. And I'm a big fan of writing your first shitty draft. And then you edit from there. But what happens is when you have a knowledge development system, your first shitty draft is like 10 times less shitty than it otherwise would be. And so it saves you a ton of time that, you know, would otherwise be could be achieved maybe if you just, you know, lived in your word processor all day. But that's not where I think the best knowledge development happens. The best knowledge development happens, like what Mortimer Adler talks about, is when you're having a conversation with a book. You know, when you are the catcher and the book author is the pitcher, you know, and they're sending the message to you, the baseball. It's not when you're reading, it's not a passive activity. As a catcher, when you're catching, you're anticipating, you're trying to understand, you're trying to predict, you know, where the person is going to go. You have a lot of thoughts. So it's a very active process. And then from that precise process of reading a book, that's when you know, record your observations, your thoughts briefly on a bib card, right? It's what we talk about. And then from there, you evolve that thought into a full main note. And that's if you're in the writing mode. You know, if you're in learning mode, then you can really, a lot of the times, just stop at the bib card moment because, you know, you're not really fully committed to writing and elaborating on that. So, yeah, I think it's a fantastic workflow, the whole, you know, Antinet and what Lumen really figured out, and then what the world, you know, lost when the computer revolution happened. So it's interesting how everything's taken place. And my goal is to just bring to light the advancements of using analog tools as a medium for developing thought.
You explain or break down the term antinet and what it means
Yeah,
for
sure.
those that aren't familiar.
So in the beginning is I, you know, the term that is the conventional term that everyone uses is Zettelkasten, which just means note box. Now the problem with Zettelkasten, there's several problems with that term. The first is that it's been a bastardized, completely confused and obfuscated term. When you search Zettelkasten, what you find is a bunch of digital interpretations of Nicholas Luhmann's Zettelkasten, and there's things that are very wrong with those interpretations. Like people will teach you to use date and timestamps in your ID for creating every single note. File should have its own, you know, 2022, 1015, you know, and then the time of the day. And it's like Luhmann never did that even once. He never used dates, you know. So it's like, I don't know why that's become the accepted common convention. And then, you know, that's a small thing. Then there's like just how the Zettelkasten is taught is just a regurgitation of Sankei Arendse's book, How to Take Smart Notes. And his was just an interpretation that used terms that Luhmann never used. Luhmann never used the term literature note. He never used the term permanent note. All these inventions have then been, you know, carried forth by a bunch of these online blog articles and all this stuff. And they've just taken Sankei Arendse's inventions and appended on their own interpretations and inventions onto an invention that was a complete misinterpretation in the first place. So the Zettelkasten, you know, I contend this is a, you know, I guess abrasive view, is, you know, the whole thing is just, I think, confusing because it doesn't really get to the essence of what Luhmann actually did. And so, you know, that's one reason why I don't really use the term Zettelkasten, is because I think it introduces a lot of confusion to the new person. However, a second reason I don't use the term Zettelkasten is because all it means is notebox, and that's not really illustrative of what it was. Sure, it was a notebox, but a lot of people use notebooks. Ryan Holiday, you know, he uses a notebook. His is just simple note cards organized by category. Like if he has finds a quote about courage, he'll write down the quote about courage and then put it in his whole subdivider, his box for courage. And then his entire box is just organized by book. And, you know, his system could be called a Zettelkasten, but it's not a Zettelkasten. It's not what we think of as Zettelkasten. Zettelkasten is really what we're talking about is a Lumanian notebox, you know, and I don't really want to call it a Lumanian notebox because that's also a, I don't know, a mouthful. So
sounds like
I came up
Eastern European country almost, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to teach you with the Lumanian notebox. So yeah, I started calling it Antinet because I was also teaching this this kid that I've actually mentored for a very long time as part of the Big Brother, Big Sister program. And I was teaching him how to actually learn marketing and extract knowledge using, you know, analog tools and note cards. And so he was like, Zettel what? And he could never get it down. He was like, what the hell is Zettel? This thing's, that's weird. So I was like, you know what? Let's start calling it something cool. Let's call it the Antinet. Oh. Like as if it's like, you know, it's a little jab at like anti-internet, kind of anti-digital. And then later on, what I did was I was like, you know what? I think we can actually encompass, when you read Nicholas Luhmann's paper, he talks about four requirements in building, you know, a Lumanian notebox. And so I've mapped those four requirements to the first four letters and characters in the Antinet, A-N-T-I. And so the first thing Luhmann actually outlined in his paper was, number one, and you need an analog notebox. So A, that's what A is. The second term is N, which is you need numeric alpha addresses. So those, you know, the addresses that start with a number and then you can append them with A, B, C, you know, alpha numeric or, you know, alpha characters, but they start with a number. And so it's not really alpha numeric. I like to use the term numeric alpha because it also conveniently fits into my new acronym, right? We all need new acronyms in this world.
Yes.
So numeric alpha, they're like freeway exit numbers too. You'll start to notice them everywhere. You know, like if you get an exit at 13A, you know, and so, and what that creates is not a hierarchy structure, but just a location structure. And think of your Antinet as a tree of knowledge. And so that brings us to the next, letter in this acronym, which is, T for tree. A tree structure, which Luhmann talks about, an internally infinitely expanding structure so that you can always evolve individual ideas and thoughts endlessly. So that's one of the problems with commonplace notebooks or Moleskine notebooks is, let's say you have a great thought in the middle page of the notebook, and then you want to expand on like the first paragraph on that notebook. Well, you can't because it's already filled up. Now with an Antinet, you can, you know, every paragraph, every thought is essentially broken up so that you can continually expand on each idea and just, you know, branch down from there. And yeah, that's the tree structure. And then the last, the I, is index. That's how you're able to find and retrieve each individual idea. You know, you create a key term that acts as a map. It's like a key value pair or associative array. So it's like you have your key term, like any key term, and then it your location. So it's like, okay, you know, courage, instead of courage being just a subdirectory in a little folder in your notebox, you go to your index and it says courage, and then it says, you know, 5257/2, and so you just navigate to 5257/2. That way, you know, if you have multiple instances of courage, you can do the how the human memory works, like the dual storage, which you can have, like, you know, stored in two different places in memory. So it kind of maps and mirrors how the human memory works, which is also pretty powerful. And then so where we're at, just to summarize, is analog, numeric alpha, tree, index, that's A-N-T-I. And then the net is network. So cybernetic network is what how Lumen referred to it. In his notebox, he has a whole term on his system being a cybernetic network, one that is almost like its own entity, its own person, that is a communication entity that gets feedback and you constantly have a communication experience with it. So it's pretty powerful stuff and pretty metaphysical, abstract stuff. You know, it's pretty deep. And that's why it's like, I go so deep into this thing. That's where the, you know, 594 page beast kind of comes in and elaborates on all of this stuff. So, yeah.
And it could have been longer too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I cut out two chapters, and I also have like, you know, 20 books sitting on my like office floor that I could have taken a dive into and used to write. And so, yeah, it could have been, I cut out probably like 150 to 150 pages at least, you know, and edited it down. So it is as advertised. Yeah. It turns you into a writing machine, and a deep, deep writing machine. Deeply footnoted. Every paragraph practically is like every other paragraph is footnoted with like, you know, so it's not just me sitting down at a blank Word doc with a blinking cursor and pulling stuff out of my ass every morning. And that's how I wrote the book. No, it's like I wrote the book where I was engaging in a dialogue with many of the great books and have expanded on them.
It's so, as people say nowadays, like meta. You used the Slipbox system or the Antinet to learn about it, and then wrote a book about the Antinet from mm-hmm. your Antinet. Like you said, it's just beautiful. I love that about it. And I don't know what all of your card structure is like, but 4214, that's like the 4000 level. So that's like formal sciences. Is that
right? I think so. And I think
formal sciences.
It might be, what is it? It's
at least I think that's what mine is. Yeah.
Yeah. Sciences. Yeah. Yeah. It's formal sciences.
200 is like the computer science, and then it kind of goes down into the information network, I assume. And then
Yeah. So like I think within formal sciences, I think there's only like I don't know, there's only a few like branches of knowledge. Like it's like math. No, I don't know. I think math might be in the natural science. I don't know. It's one of them. But the reason why it's 4200 is because I think it's computer science or information science is a big branch. And you know, that's an interesting thing that we're highlighting is that a lot of people get hung up on is modeling and using the academic disciplinary fields to kind of model knowledge, you know. And it's interesting. Yeah. It's like I don't think knowledge can really be any taxonomy is never going to be enough, you know. However, there's been a lot of evolution and advancements and thoughts around the academic disciplinary fields. So if you need a rough start in which to kind of start out and label your knowledge from which you can inwardly infinitely expand, then you might as well use the academic disciplinary fields. So this is my you know, logic behind it. And you also might as well use, you know, one that's like constantly evolving, which is Wikipedia's, you know, open, you know, wiki whole system of creating their own academic disciplinary fields. So that's the reason that I used it. And it makes sense in my mind. If it doesn't make sense in anyone, you know, other people's minds, like a lot of people get hung up on this in the Antinet Reddit, then totally fine. Create your own taxonomy, create your own, you know, system, right? Lumen created his own, you know, taxonomy, right? And the beautiful thing about this Lumen's, you know, the Lumanian notebox or the Antinet is that the top level taxonomy is just a way to start. And then your structure of the notebox is going to inevitably transform into something weird, you know, over time, because it mirrors how your brain works and how you think. And that's a good thing, because you're stamping out your old past version of yourself and your mind in static paper form so that you can constantly review and go through it and be like, wow, this is weird. I forgot I wrote about this. And
yeah, there's
just gems of wisdom in there.
And that's like that communication with notebooks concept in a way. Like you can, I can't remember if it was you or Johannes Schmidt or Lumen who was talking about the duck. Is it, do you know what I'm talking about? Like if you had a duck for dinner, not to eat the duck, but like say you're eating with the duck and you talk to it and say, hey, how's your day? It just quacks at you. Tell me, what do you think about, you know, the law of general relativity, quack. It's like always going to say quack. So it's not a very good conversation partner, but the NoteBox system or the Antinet can be, in a way, a communication partner with yourself, because our thoughts move, our awareness, what we're thinking about shifts around from time to time. And then we're going into a new day or into our box with this new concept, whatever's on our mind. And then we accidentally run across something that we thought 6 months ago. And it's like that conversation partner. It's like, well, hey, did you think about this? Or what about from that angle? Or how does it connect to this? Or what's relevant or what's similar? And the mind starts to create that new knowledge. It develops something new that really couldn't have happened. And if I may, my quick background about it, I read Sanka Aran's book, How to Take Smart Notes, last November. And I read it right after I had read Mortimer Adler's book, How to Read a Book, which I know I get every time I tell people about it, they laugh at me and they think it's silly.
I know. I love having it on my shelf. Someone walks in and be like, how to read a book. That's just, they laugh at it. You know, it's something that's like, if you put it on the coffee table, it's just like people, half the people think it's a joke, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And because it's obviously, you know, so it's like, well, how do you read a book about reading a book if you don't know how to read a book? But it's full of nuggets, and it got me super inspired and excited to do what you were talking about, is to really learn how to catch what the author is pitching and to be an active participant, not just a passive, like, oh, that's interesting, or I don't agree with that, but to take a stance that there were rules and ways to do it effectively. And so coming right off of that, I picked up Sanka Aran's book, How to Take Smart Notes. So I was already pretty jazzed, and it's a good book, but it's like a, I don't know how many pages it is, like 150 page pep rally about knowledge development, and like hardly any implementation. So I was jazzed. Like I wanted to do it. And I really struggled for a few months. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, this guy, he talks about Luhmann. He says, this is what Luhmann did. This is how prolific he was. And it's like, sounds great. Let's do it. I want to be a writing and research machine too. But it did not tell me how, other than it, and it pushes you to use the digital tools. It says you should probably use those just for portability and for searching. But I didn't. I wanted, like, okay, if Luhmann did note cards, I want to do note cards. And I just like to write on paper anyway. But I really struggled. And then I think I found your first videos in December of last year and was immediately like, yeah, okay, this guy's, he's, because there are so many videos on YouTube about how I make my second brain in Rome. Or it's like, no, who else is doing it in the analog way? And that's where, you know, where I came across you.
I'm glad I started publishing, you know, so I can connect with a lot of people that I think there's a lot of truth, and it's shown. We've created like a whole movement, and there's like a whole, you know, the whole Antinet Reddit community is growing, you know, my email list, like there's a lot of people that feel the same way that you did and that I did. And there's like this unspoken truth that there's this internal dialogue that occurs when you go and read your old notes, and they're written in your own handwriting, and you have this, like, what Luhmann called the ghost in the box factor, you know, where you get to read and review all of your old thoughts, and then they all of a sudden, you know, they kind of trigger, they act as a cue to create this whole internal dialogue going on in your own mind of, oh, I remember that thought, and oh wow, I actually disagree with this thought now. And then you can kind of see yourself in your own handwriting from like 5 years ago, and then, you know, expand on that thought. And essentially there's just a lot of wisdom and truth in, you know, using the analog form. And I found the same exact thing that you found when reading Sanka Aran's book. He had like maybe a few pages that outlined in vague terms how the Zettelkasten works. And then he has just this flippant sentence that says, well, you should probably go with digital for the mobility factor alone. And that's it. And then he also outlined, you know, how the system works incorrectly. He was like, Luhmann started at 1, and then he went to 1A, and then 1B, and 1C. And then the next note, if there wasn't anywhere, he started at 2. It's like, well, actually, no, Luhmann did have a top level branching taxonomy, you know, basic structure, just like the antinet has as well, where it's like you use 1000/1 and then, you know, you kind of create your own top level taxonomy. So it didn't just start as this random bottom up thing that a lot of people have just, you know, fallen in love with. You know, this whole bottom up idea is it started as one, you know, that they think it just started as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for like all these random thoughts. It's like, no, he had a taxonomy, and he had 108 categories in his first settle Kasten. And, you know, that one might've been more bottom up than the second one where he spent the rest of his life developing had 11 top level sections, you know? And so even how Sankey Arens described it in his book, which was very limited, was incorrect. And then he invented all these terms that everyone has, you know, spent most of their time on YouTube and stuff just regurgitating those terms as like fleeting notes and literature notes, permanent notes Luhmann never used, right? And then on top of that, it's like, you're right, like the rest of his book was just this pep rally where he just started talking about random shit, like, you know, flow and being in flow. It's like, great. And it's like, you're almost like reading yet another Cal Newport book where he just talks about these things. And you're like, okay, I signed up to actually learn how to become a research and writing machine, not just, you know, see it, get a more academic flavor yeah. version of Cal Newport.
If the title were Why You Should Take Smart Notes, I would be like, okay, this book delivered, but it's yeah. how. And I'm like, you haven't told me how.
Yeah.
I really want to know how, because there's so much emphasis on it really amped me up. Like, if you do this wrong, if you fill it with just quotes, or if you don't do the structure right, it's not going to work. You're not going yeah. to become this. And so it's like, okay, well, I struggle with this perfectionism around it. I'm like, okay, well, I want to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. And it set me up to be kind of overfit around how it has to be, you know, exactly. And I've learned it's not totally dynamic. You can't just change it all the time, but it's, mm-hmm. it's not rigid. It's exactly. rough structure. It has some wiggle room. You can try things your own way a little bit, but it has to follow like an order, but it becomes habit. It becomes part of your routine every day as you develop knowledge. Like, okay,
yeah.
Oh, this is a new thought. This is something related to courage, like you were saying. So I would go to my index under C, look up courage, just kind of see if there's anything already there, spend a minute or two perusing. But yeah, I'd love to, if we could even talk about the taxonomies. I think it's so cool how you took the idea from Wikipedia and brought it into Zettelkasten. So could you explain like the 1000, 2000, 3000, 4000, and 5000? What does that mean?
Yeah. So yeah, the let's see. So the Wikipedia, their academic disciplinary fields, like I have it pulled up here, is they have five top level branches of knowledge. The first one maps onto arts and humanities, right? So that's 1000. And these are things like, you know, performing arts, visual arts, you know, design, history, languages, linguistics, law. Awesome. And then, you know, the second big branch of knowledge is social sciences, like anthropology, economics, geography, psychology, sociology. The third branch is natural science, like biology, chemistry, earth science, astronomy, physics. The fourth is formal sciences, like computer science and mathematics. And that's where, you know, the reason why the 4214, which is where I put the meta, you know, my own antinet stuff in 4214 and talk about that, it's because it's within information science, which is what computer science used to be called, which is interesting. Like that field used to be information studies and information science. And then the 5000 is for anything else, like the applied sciences, applied arts and sciences, like agriculture, architecture, business, marketing, life philosophy, personal development, all of that stuff. So yeah. And you know, it's interesting too, is like there's the whole concept, and it starts with, like, I think it was Aristotle came up with, or it might have been Plato, where he tried to create his own taxonomy back. The
Organon, is that it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it goes back, there was like someone created like the first tree visualization of a way to, you know, view your knowledge in tree format, like, goes back, you know, way deep in history. So there's almost like this human nature, deep understanding of being able to understand things and knowledge using, you know, trees. And I like to think of the tree structure and like taxonomies, not in the, like, the Platonic abstract sense, but I like to think of like the Antoinette, you know, as an actual tree. Like, picture an oak tree, you know, it's like just massive, has, you know, leaves on it. Each individual leaf is like a note card, essentially. And if you think of the structure of a tree, it is not like completely static. You know, it's constantly evolving, constantly growing, constantly changing. And it's flexible, but it's not too flexible. It's not dynamic. It's not fluid. And that's what everyone is in love with these days. So that's the problem with digital systems, is like, when you can change everything, inevitably everyone spends all of their time and energy constantly tweaking and changing the structure instead of letting it evolve and be static. And so how do you describe an oak tree structure? Well, you can describe it as anti-fragile, as rough, as something that, yeah, evolves, but you're not going to change it. You're not going to change its core, you know, structure and its core personality. And so that's kind of how I like to think about the, you know, taxonomies. Is we've all kind of created these, you know, taxonomies are created for other people, and it's created for everyone to agree upon, you know. Whereas how your mind works and how individual minds work is like, it's very unique. And so, you know, it's a lot more chaotic, and it resembles that of like an actual tree instead of, you know, actual oak tree, for instance, instead of, you know, a nested tree structure or a hand drawn, you know, version of a tree of knowledge or something. So that's what I'll say on that, is that I think, you know, the academic disciplinary fields map nicely to understanding and organizing knowledge, but it should be both order and disorder, as Lumen would call it. It needs to be chaotic as well. Like, you know, trees withering away, losing stuff, you know, it's fine.
That's the way living things seem to work. What's so exciting about that idea of this taxonomy is that it's not complete chaos. There's an organizing element to it, but you can study, it's an invitation. Like, for me right now, my 1000s is my biggest, the humanities section. And 3000s is the smallest, because that's the natural sciences.
Yep.
I have just a couple of cards in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, no matter where you are, whether you're in maybe high school or college or beyond, this thing can handle any interest.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. It's as long as it's a thought that you want to develop in any area, any discipline, any part of your life, this is a valid tool. It's scalable. I don't know if it's scalable is the right word, but it can handle whatever you throw at it, whatever interest you throw at it, you know, metallurgy, mechanics, art, science, whatever. You can use your system and develop from there. So this book, the Antoinette Zettelkasten, is going to help people become a research and writing machine. And do you want to talk a little bit about the neo-intellectual life and what does that entail?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And the way, you know, as you know, because you are a new intellectual as well, officially. Yeah. Is, you know, that was an idea that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm writing the book. And then how do I actually want to, you know, take this to the next level? How can I, you know, impact other people, you know, beyond just writing books? And so that's when I decided to, hey, I want to, like, you know, I want to do either a boot camp, you know, like a writing boot camp, like a 3-day boot camp, or I want to create a cohort course, which is all the rage, you know, that a lot of people are doing. And then it was like, or I can do one-on-one coaching. So there's different vehicles of delivering value and transforming people and really helping to teach people. But then the question ultimately was, well, what should I teach people? Should I just teach the Antoinette and like how to actually build your own Antoinette and, you know, do this? And the problem with doing that is that it's really, once, you know, you don't need a cohort course. People have done this and could probably continue to do this, but is you know, you can create like a cohort course on just teaching the Antinet. But the problem is that, you know, if you have to teach a whole cohort course on just learning the Antinet, then you're not teaching it right, because it's really a simple fundamental system. You can, like, you know, of course, you know, there's different levels to it, but the problem is, it's like, well, if you just focus on just, you know, becoming a knowledge machine and just using an Antinet, the problem with that is that the Antinet is just a means to an end. And what is the ultimate end? Well, the ultimate end is you want to develop your mind. You want to become a more prolific writer. You want to be a better researcher. And then really that's like closer to the end, but that's not the true end. The true end is the whole concept of creating the neo-intellectual life, which is to also be able to build out your own tribe and your own, you know, followers and your own community of people that you can then deliver value to. And in exchange for delivering that value, you can receive value, you know, and monetize and, you know, help your people that you kind of create a tribe and community around. And doing that is what I call creating the neo-intellectual life. That is, you know, basically spending your days doing intellectual activity while also making a comfortable living. And so I launched the program, the Neo Intellectual Institute, as really, you know, essentially the first test run of, you know what, I want to create something so transformational that I'm going to give you, like, you know, massive value. And it's not essentially about creating this into a long-term business. Like I've told you and, you know, others, it's like, you know, this might never, I might never run another cohort for the Neo Intellectual Institute. This is just me being able to help people, transform people, make an impact on people, and see if I can help people, you know, become better thinkers, better writers, start to put themselves out there and build a tribe. And that is what the Neo Intellectual Institute is. And I've got a ton of applications. And, you know, since we started, the interesting thing is I, you know, I'll never say never, but I don't think, like, this was such an awesome experience, you know, like of taking you and the other Neo Intellectuals through the journey. Yet I don't know if I'm going to do another cohort again soon, because I want to, you know, focus on launching the book and then kind of go in the direction of going the writing direction and, you know, helping people become more prolific writers and doing that through a cohort course or something, you know, wherein, like, the Neo Intellectual Institute was there to really help me develop the content and transform people's lives and work with, you know, people like my freaking awesome Neo Intellectuals to see if, hey, can I even help people? And it's like, the answer resoundingly has been hell yeah. So yeah. Yeah,
I can attest to that. I mean, this podcast wouldn't be here
if, yeah,
we hadn't worked together. So yeah.
Yeah.
Very transparent.
Yeah. 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 It's just been so freaking awesome to see your transformation, you know, and it's like you know, to develop the brand, develop your writing, to get in the flow of pushing in, you know, we've seen a lot of the external results, you know, of like setting up the website and creating your writing pieces and creating even, you know, the more knowledge in your Antinet. But there's also, I think, been this like internal metaphysical shift and internal shift that you can't see. It's like your brain is transformed because you've been put through this like practically Navy SEALs version of knowledge development, you know, held accountable to actually, you know, do knowledge dev and all that stuff. So it's been, I'm freaking so excited to see your progress, man. It's been awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I feel super lucky to have been one of the few that was able to get into the Neo Intellectual Institute. Cause yeah, who knows what's going to happen, but it's definitely changed my life. And I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, really just one more question. I'm super curious, Stewie, your own personal Antinet, it's rather large. And the book came out of one branch, you know, pretty much, it seems like 4214. You've got so many other cool things in there. You think, I mean, I know you were saying you're going to try to focus now on this book release, maybe looking into a cohort, but beyond that,
yeah.
Is there anything else though you think that is going to come out?
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. It's like, I think I would say probably like 96%. There's a reason I use 96%. It's but I won't get into that now. I think I talk about it in the book. I would say 96% of the notes were pulled from like 4214 for this book. But yeah, I have a lot of other branches in there. And what I would see on the horizon is a book about writing, a book about copywriting, a book about marketing and tribe building. These are down the line. The one thing that I do have planned, and this is, I guess, the first ever time first time I've talked about this publicly, is I'll be launching a newsletter, a physical monthly, publication, hand delivered to people every single month, by their postman, that teaches them one thing only, is how to become an influential writer. So the working title for this newsletter is called The Influential Writer. And so as part of that, I'm going to be essentially, writing not a book every month, but probably, 15 to 20 pages of like just actionable, freaking awesome material every single month. And so a lot of that material is going to be, pulled from, developed from all the other sections of the Antinet. So
sounds awesome. I love that it's physical too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
World needs more of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's inspired by, I'm going to be carrying forth the torch of a guy that I've probably talked about a lot, is Gary Halbert, who is the late copywriter who is just a fantastic writer at being able to connect and write authentically and become an influential writer. And so it's going to be in that style of that he used to, send out a monthly physical newsletter. And what I'm going to be launching is, the influential writer is going to be, a lot of it's going to be kind of carry forth the torch of what he started and he's developed. And that's why it's going to be physical. So it's going to be, written in the style it's going to be written in. And it's also, it's going to be, it's delivered first class mail. So it's going to be a special experience that everyone has every single month of getting, waiting for the very first of the month so that they can get that letter hand delivered. And it's going to be like
some mail you actually want to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Scott, this has been a wonderful conversation. And if somebody out there has had their interest sparked and wants to learn more about your work and the Antinet in general, where's somewhere they can go to learn more and get involved with you?
Yeah. So I would say if they're interested in the Antinet, and I think that's the best way to go, is go to antinet.org, antinet.org. And when you go there, there'll be, depending on the time that you listen to this, there will either be a free ebook, a 63-page ebook that you can download, and it teaches you how to build your own Antinet, teaches you the 9, mistakes to avoid and the things that people run into, the pitfalls, the most common questions, all that stuff. And I believe you can get there actually by going to antinet.org/FG for free guide. And then right now that is the homepage of antinet.org, but soon with the book launch, which is going to be in the very first week or so of December, you will see the actual, book, which I'm going to, I'm in the midst of locking down the printer and fulfillment house to get the book bulk printed. So it'll be on Amazon eventually, but my goal is to get it bulk printed so that I can give it to people. I'm going to sell the book at cost. So the cost of the book plus shipping plus the fulfillment cost, which is cheap. So I'm going to try to get it as low as possible, not make a penny off of the book. I want to get into as many hands as possible and then sell it on my website so that Amazon, doesn't hike up the price or force you to price it at a certain level. And, that's the plan.
Like I said, the book it's big. It's a tome, but I thought of it last night as like a giant upon which many new books will probably emerge. And so thank you so much for taking the time to do all you did to really restore us from a knowledge development apostasy, if you will, and, you know, bring this to light. It's changed my life, and it's made me perhaps more annoying to my friends and family because I'm learning so much and I just want to tell them all the time. But yeah, I recommend anyone who's out there who is interested, do check out antinet.org and Scott Shepherd. Thank you so much, Scott.
Cool. All right, Nathan, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to the Vertical Thinking Podcast with Nathan Cheever. If you got something out of this episode, please share it with a friend or family member who you think will benefit as well. And if you'd like to learn more about vertical thinking, head over to nathancheever.com. And until next time, have a great week. Bye-bye.